When the stage lights come up, there's only a microphone, a stool, and a can of Diet Pepsi, keeping comedian Paula Poundstone company. Each show, though, is different, even though those items are the same. Poundstone is known for improvising with the audience. Sometimes it seems planned, but I don't think it is ever planned. When you improvise with the audience. Paula Poundstone has been a stand-up comic for 27 years. She's winner of an Emmy, two Cable Ace Awards, and an American Comedy Award for Best Female Stand-Up. You may also know her from her regular appearances on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. This fall, you can catch her Bravo special titled Look What the Cat Dragged In. Her new book is There's Nothing in This Book That I Meant to Say. Her new book, her only book, right? This is your only book, right?
Actually,
you have a children's book.
I have three math workbooks
as well.
That are just out. Yes, called the Math with a Laugh series that I wrote with my high school math teacher.
How come?
Let's see. Well, I was looking for decent workbooks for my kids to work on over the summer to keep them tip-top shape in math, and I really couldn't find anything that. You know, they would have these entertaining-looking covers, and then you'd go inside, and it was just, you know, math problems and math problems and math problems. And so we, got this idea to write a funny math book.
What? Can you give me an example? Do you remember anything?
Well, I remember lots. One of my favorite characters in that math book is Leonardo Digit, whose father owns a number store, and Leonardo works there, like, on the weekends and stuff. And Leonardo... had a dream to play on the California Angels, but because of an error in filling out the dream form, he ended up playing for the California Angles, which was a geometry team. And he's probably my favorite character.
Are they out yet?
Yes, they're published by a group called Heinemann, and the first one is for 4th, 5th level, and the second one is 6th, 7th level, and the third one is 8th, 9th level.
Because I have to admit, I did not find that as I was, I didn't pay.
I think it's somewhere on my website, which is paulapoundstone.com,
nice,
by the way.
Yes. Yeah. And I have gone there.
Have you? Yeah, I think it's on there somewhere. I can't say this with expertise because I don't even know how to turn the computer on. But I'm happy for the rest of you. I really am.
So you don't know what they have on your website?
Well, no, I do. I do. I write all the text and I take all the pictures, but I don't know how to put it on there, and I don't even know how to type into it. I occasionally get to glance at it if my assistant puts it on for me.
So this picture of your desk that's on the website?
I took that photo.
That's your desk?
That is my desk. It's a little bit improved since that time.
I thought that you write in the book that you have OCD.
I do.
How does a person with OCD have a desk that looks so messy?
Get a desk that bad? Well, I can't tell you the kind of pain it has put me in. It took me 9 years to write this book for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is I wrote it neatly by hand. I couldn't hand it into my assistant to type any pages until if I had more than one cross out, I just couldn't tolerate it. But finally, towards the last couple of years of this ridiculously prolonged. I mean, there's nothing in the book that should have taken 9 years, quite honestly. But
you had a little bit of life experience.
Well, there was a lot of life going on. One of the things is I was not a writer for a living, so I have no designated writer time, and so I really did have to just slip it in between the cracks of everything else I was doing, and there weren't a lot of cracks there for a long time. But so towards the last couple of years, I just said to myself, you know, until this book is done, I have to put aside my desire to tidy. And so my room just grew like a fungus. It was unbelievable how what a mess my room became.
Did it help you psychologically?
Probably not. But now I may, you know, surely I'll spend another year getting it tamed again. But my desk is back. You can actually see the surface of the desk now. But there's a photo on the website of because I... People kept emailing me, fans, saying, oh, you know, aren't you going to get back to me? You know, and so I finally took this picture to show people why I had perhaps seemed unresponsive.
In reading this book, I was just wondering if, does your mind operate in the same way that this book, you wrote this book out in longhand?
Yes.
Because in reading it, I thought maybe she dictated this book because it's so quick.
No. And people kept suggesting to me, like, obviously, because 9 years was such a ridiculously long time to write a book, people kept saying, why don't you just dictate it? That doesn't make any sense to me as a way to do it. I don't know how you do it. Because how do you go back and go, no, not like that, like this? Are you going to say it correctly the first time? I wouldn't think so. So One of the things about writing it the way I wrote, by doing it by hand and rewriting over and over again for neatness, is that by the time it finally got to the editor, I was told it was one of the cleanest edits they'd ever seen, although it looked to me like there was plenty of red pen on the page. But I think that's because, you know, I mean, there was a sort of certain natural polishing process that took place just in neatening it up.
Would you, even within a paragraph, you jump from a history of Jean of Arc to comments about a dog shark. Within sentence to sentence. I mean, does your mind really, I mean, that's how you...
Constantly. And in the past, the writing of the book was really, really fun to do. When I first made the deal, you know, 10 years ago now or something, to write this book, I think there was an understanding between me and the publisher that it was to be, you know, memoir-ish, you know, funny. I knew I didn't want to write just plain my act, although there's parts of my act in the book. But I knew I didn't want to do that. First of all, I don't think you could fill a book with it. And second of all, it just didn't sound that interesting to me to do it that way. But I really did do that thing where I sat in front of blank paper for a long time, feeling just silly writing about myself. I thought, well, it's a little bit presumptuous to write about myself, given that I'm not dead and I haven't really done anything yet. But I do have obsessive compulsive disorder, and one of the ways it manifests itself in me is that I can't stop talking for the life of me. And what happens is, no matter what anybody else mentions, it reminds me of something that happened to me once, and I end up cutting them off and you know, talking at length. And so one day I was sitting in the car, struggling to write something, and all of a sudden it occurred to me. I thought, you know, I can't just write about myself because I feel stupid. But if I were to write about Abraham Lincoln, I would not be able to shut up about myself. And that's he was actually my first test chapter. And that's exactly how it worked. I got as far as, you know, his mother died of milk disease before I was thinking, you know, my mother had a terrible headache all the time. And, you know, Helen Keller, well, she was easy. Although,
was she easy?
I don't know, everything. There's something about how beloved and special and, you know, obviously courageous and genius, and how no one could possibly imagine. But, you know, you can imagine yourself in lots of situations. There's no way to imagine being Helen Keller. Just no way, you know. And this made it all the more fun, I think, to just allow my... That's what I did. I just allowed myself to jump off the way that I normally would, even though normally I have to curtail myself in conversation. I mean, luckily, none of my children are blind and deaf, but my oldest daughter, Tosha, has astigmatism and doesn't listen. And so the similarities, the parallels, were there over and over again.
Paula Poundstone is our guest. There's nothing in this book that I meant to say. It's her book. Let me bring in some of our listeners. Curtis is in the U District. Hi, Curtis.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm in Wedgwood now.
All right. Oh, you're driving, huh?
Curtis is moving.
Hey, I was calling. I love your work on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I think it's hilarious.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love to watch you on stand-up, too. But one of my favorite things you do is home movies.
Ah, well, this is... I was on that a long time ago, back when we were young. However, I can say this with great pride, which is that show was originally conceived because we were making another show called Science Court.
Yeah, I love Science Court.
Science Court was a great show. I'm really proud of Science Court. It was an animated show that was on ABC Saturday mornings years ago, when they decided they had to have intelligent content in the morning. And when I would show up to do my job for Science Court, invariably I'd go to this little studio in Santa Monica to record, and the people who made the show were in Watertown, Massachusetts, so I'd be hooked up via some line, you know. And the director would read the other person's line to me, and I would then say my own lines. But I was always late, and I would always explain why I was late when I got there. And it was always because of some kid crisis or some difficulty with, you know, this or that. And he said to me one day, he goes, do you mind if, because I would spend like 5 or 10 minutes, you know, coming down before I could settle in and start to work, telling him all this stuff. So he said, do you mind if I record this sometime? And it was actually from that he decided to try to make what became Home Movies.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which I love it that my angst at the time created. In fact, if you look, you know, it's now on DVD. because it has a real cult following, that show. If you look on the spine of the DVD, that little illustration of the little black baby, that's my oldest daughter, Tosha, who is now 16. And let me just say, one of the things I didn't like about the show was that they had that little baby on that bouncy thing. In one of the shows, I don't know if they did it more than one of the shows, they had the little baby in one of those bouncy things that you hang, like kind of these bungee cords in the doorway.
Johnny Jump Up.
Yes. Well, my oldest daughter happens to have cerebral palsy, and therefore I had been to a lot of physical therapy and had been told that kids aren't supposed to bear weight on their legs until they can. So if they're pulling up, then that's fine. But to prop them up in a thing and do that. Now, meanwhile, I've never met one kid with a physical disability where it turns out it was the Johnny Jump Up that screwed him up. I've never heard that. But the physical therapist used to say to me, oh, those things aren't good for kids' legs, and that, you know, I should never use something like that with Tosha. And therefore, it looked really funny in animation, and so, but I didn't want to spread the idea that people should be using the Johnny Jump Ups, although I must say it did look really, really funny.
Thank you. John's in Linwood. We'll end with this. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. I just wanted to ask Paula if she's still playing saxophone.
Oh, wow.
I gave her a lesson, in Seattle about, I'm thinking it's 15 or 20 years ago.
Just arbitrarily you gave her a lesson?
She called, and she wanted to learn Happy Birthday. And she wanted to learn it by rote.
Oh, yeah, because I can't read music. That is so funny. Yeah, I do not play the saxophone at this point in my life. However, in my terribly overcrowded bedroom, as I've been trying to go through and clean it out and have only what's necessary in my room, for some odd reason, the saxophone has made the cut several times now. That saxophone still sits in my bedroom as if any day now I'm going to pick that baby up and whip out a little happy birthday.
You were a great learner there. I'll tell you, it was a lot of fun, and thank you for the lunch. You took me out for lunch for that too.
Wow, gee, I was a lot more generous back then, and apparently a lot more of a devoted student.
John, thanks for your call, and Paula Poundstone, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.